And so at the end, by the 21st day, I felt that God owed me a lot. He really owed me. You know, He must manifest. He must, because He owed me. I sacrificed. That is the young, early thinking. After serving God for 25 years, I know now, God owes us nothing. He owes us nothing. But that was how I felt. I wanted to change the world. I expected, I read the Bible miracles. I read through. I said, God, I want this. I want this. I want the power to heal and bring healing to the sick. I want to see blind eyes open. I like to raise a few dead people. At the end of 40 days fast, I expected some sort of lightning stroke from heaven. Right? I was looking for it. A thunderbolt. And I remember on one of those days, it could have been the second 40 days. Now the first 40 days fast came and went. And I look around, you know, look in the mirror whether I've changed. I've started glowing like Moses. Glowing like Moses. And all that. And nothing happened. So you get very discouraged. God, I'm not going to fast anymore. What happened to the signs and wonders? You said it. You said it. And you know the two things that God was dealing with. Number one, to show us how small we were in God's timing. And number two, one of the biggest things before you can discover God's destiny, you must learn to die. Before you can fulfill a vision, there is a death of a vision, your own. Before God's vision can come true. Because sometimes we're like Moses, we have half the story. Can you imagine living in a world with half of everything? You go out to buy a car and you're half a car. You go and buy a cake, you're half a cake. Everything you buy is half. It's a terrible world. Try sitting on half a chair, right? You won't be supported. You have to support yourself with one leg. When we have half the revelation, it's not good enough. Moses knew that God called him. Moses sacrificed. To him, it's a big sacrifice. In Hebrews 11 says, he refused to be called Pharaoh's daughter and he chose to live with the people in poor slave conditions. So there was a sacrifice involved. And number three, Moses was eager to do something for God. He is enthusiastic. He has zeal. He knew he was called. He had paid the price. And he had zeal. That was not enough. Because he missed on three things. He missed on his timing. He missed on his attitude. What kind of attitude would cause him to kill someone? There's some pride involved. And he missed on his methods. Not good enough. So after I went through my low on the first 40 days, told God, I'm not going to fast again. No results. But now that I look back, there are a lot of results. When Jesus appeared to me in 1986, that's about nearly 10 years after I went to ministry, in 76, some of the things that began happening, you know what the Lord said? These are the things that you sow when you were fasting. Wow. Even I have forgotten about my prayers. We are like Zechariah. Remember Zechariah, old Zechariah in the Bible, in Gospel of Luke. He prayed for a child. Zechariah was married to Elizabeth. They are the parents of John the Baptist. And I can imagine when Zechariah, how old were they when they get married? Well, let's plus and minus. In those days, they probably married late. So let's say, some of them actually married quite early. So let's plus and minus. Let's say they got married at the age of 25. And so, like most couples, the first couple of years, they may not have any children, but although in those days, they want children very fast. And then at the end of the first year, no child. Second year, no child. Third year, no child. They started praying to God. God, we need a miracle. God, we need a child. God, we need a child. By the time they were 35, they still didn't have a child. They really discouraged this time. God hasn't answered their prayer. By the time he says, oh God, please, please, I want a child. For all things, I give up everything. I want a child. I want a child. I want a child. By the age of 45, from the early days when he prayed, God, give me a child. He could fast, he could pray, he paid the price, did everything, everything he knew. Nothing happened. By the age of 45, oh God, well, you want a child. You won't give me a child, that's it. You know, a little bit more surrendered. By the age of 55, he was happy as he is, you know. Things look, you know, a bit too late kind of thing. And how old was he? Probably in his 70s. Because the Bible says they were of great age. You don't use the word great lightly in the Bible. And he had completely forgotten his prayer. So one fine day when it came for him to do the incense and the offering, an angel of the Lord stood in the Gospel of Luke at the altar and says, your prayers are answered. And Zechariah said, which prayer? What prayer? When? Where? He had completely forgotten. And then the angel said, the Lord is going to give you a son. You shall call his name John. And Zechariah, by that time, says, How can it happen? I'm old now. Why don't you give me a miracle 40 years ago? Look at how old I am. Look at how old she is. We need a miracle. But God is a God of miracles. And in the end, he found it hard to believe. But God still answered him. He had forgotten. But God did not forget. God never forgets every single teardrop you cry when you pray. God never forgets every single fasting you did. The only thing is, he does not answer on our timetable. Because we are all part of a bigger plan that he has. And Jesus, when he came, he himself had to flow with the timing of God. For him, it must have been as difficult as for us. And Jesus was perfect in every way. There is nothing in Jesus' life that you could say like us. You could say, well, we were not ready. You couldn't say that of Jesus. He was ready any day. But yet, he had to fulfill the timing of God. And in Galatians 4, it says, when the fullness of time had come, even Jesus coming to this earth, there was a fullness of time before he could manifest. And before Jesus could show himself publicly, there was a fullness of time when he was about the age of 30. That's the timing of God. Now let's look one more phrase here at the timing of God in the book of Matthew chapter 1. And we have to bring ourselves to reality. I mean, think about the people 1,500 years ago who thought that the sun goes around the earth, the planets go around the earth, the stars go around the earth. It must have been difficult for them to accept the fact that they are wrong and that they are very small. That man is very small in terms of the whole universe. And that we are not the center of everything. God is, but not us. It must have been difficult. And I understand it is difficult for us to accept God's timing. If you have not had struggles to accept God's timing, you're not human. Or you must be perfect. All of us struggle to accept the bigger timing of God. It's a part of the dying process. Matthew chapter 1, verse 17. All the generations from Abraham to David are 14 generations. From David until the captivity in Babylon are 14 generations. From the captivity in Babylon until the Christ are 14 generations. Look, there is a timing of God. Now, if each generation is plus or minus about 40 years, 14 will make it 560 years. There's a gap of 560 between these kind of revelations. And there's a purpose behind those things. Probably the gap is probably about, you know, roughly between 500-600 years of gap. But you look at it, why does it center around Abraham to David, David to the captivity to Christ? See, in God's calendar, there are milestones in His planning. And mind you, there are milestones in God's plan for His church today. There are milestones. Let me point to some of them. They are not in the scripture, but you can deduce them from church history. You can see that Christianity went through different cycles. And the Bible does have a revelation of what the church goes through in the book of Revelation. In the revelation of the seven churches, you find that the church went through all those phases and each lasting different lengths of time. And just a rough run, so you could place your place in history. When the church first started in the book of Acts, the church was like the Ephesus church. And it was, you know, strong in the word, the works, everything. But slowly, the church in Revelation chapter 2, the church of Ephesus, although in verse 3, Revelation 2 verse 3, they persevered, they patient, they labored. But in verse 4, the church lost the first love for Jesus. They began to sidetrack to doctrinal issues, sidetrack to church issues, sidetrack to church structure issues, and they forgot that the whole thing is a personal relationship with Jesus, not just an organization. So you can trace the history of the church as the church moved into the area called the early church fathers, the Nicolaitans and the Nicene fathers. There's a whole set of books on that. And then after some time, the church in history moved into the Smyrna period. And Smyrna, in verse 8, is called the persecuted church. Which is true. Check church history and see. I dare you to check church history out over these 2,000 years of church history. From the time of the early Christians, as the first apostles all died off and the second generation took over, they lost their first love for Jesus. They sidetracked into doctrinal issues and into church issues and personal issues and all kinds of issues, and they lost their first love for Jesus. And then suddenly, the church was plunged into a period of persecution. You all remember those days. Fox's books of martyr record all the persecution the church went through. You all remember the great persecution of the church under the Roman Empire, especially by Nero, the emperor. Oh, the Christians were thrown to the lions, tortured in every way. Thousands of Christians died. Christianity was an outcast religion. It was treated like dung. And we were persecuted. They want to wipe Christianity from the face of the earth. The church went through the Smyrna period. It lasted some years. And then things changed when the time of God came. Remember the Emperor Constantine. When he suddenly had a vision of the cross. And on his way to battle, he realized. And all this is in secular as well as church history. He suddenly saw this vision and he says, you conquer by this sign. And he won, and Christianity turned the other way to become the official religion of the whole empire. Suddenly being a Christian was an in thing. And the church began to move into a different phase of recognition, privilege. And guess what? it moved into the Pergamos spirit called the compromising church. Because with wealth, with recognition, there is a possibility of compromising.